Blog Talk Radio.
Is Art and Soul Radio. Welcome. I'm your host, Leslie Riley, the Artist Success Expert. It's Monday, October 11th, 2010, and I'm coming to you from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Coming up is the nuts and bolts of owning a quilt business with Pat Sloan. Art and Soul Radio is brought to you by Art and Soul, the National Art Retreat Extraordinaire, where you can take workshops from some of the top instructors in the country, like Sherry Hobb, Beryl Taylor, L.K. Ludwig, and many of the show's guests. At Art and Soul, you will come away feeling empowered with new techniques, new ideas, and new friends. For retreat dates and instructors, visit artandsoulretreat.com. The show link is blogtalkradio.com/art-and-soul-radio. You can listen to all the archived shows there, and you can always check in with iTunes and go to the podcast for Art and Soul Radio. Please also visit the Art and Soul Radio Facebook fan page and sign up as a fan. That way you'll be notified as soon as new shows are scheduled. So today, we have Pat Sloan. Pat started sewing as a child and continued to sew clothing for herself until she discovered quilting. She's been quilting for over 15 years. A few years ago, Pat started teaching and then decided to put her ideas into patterns. She now runs her own design business called Pat Sloan and Company, located in Fairfax County, Virginia. In addition to publishing her own patterns, she designs patterns for McCall's Quilting, McCall's Quick Quilts, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilting World, Create and Decorate, and the Fonz and Porter magazines. That's a lot. Okay, Pat has also designed several fabric lines for P&B Textiles, and she's published more than 15 books with Leisure Art. Quilter, teacher, author, pattern maker, fabric designer, and I know there's a lot more, so let's get started. Hello, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leslie. It's a long list of to-dos for me.
Well, I know a lot of your fans are listening today, but for those that don't yet know you, can you take a few minutes to tell us about all the many wonderful things that you do?
Well, I, like you said, I design things. I started out, you know, in the industry as like a lot of people do as a pattern designer, where we do quilt patterns that people buy, just like you would buy a pair, you know, a pants pattern or an apron pattern. We design quilts, yeah. And then, you know, that evolves. And so you end up doing fabric lines and then books and travel and teach. And then I do a lot of stuff on the internet because I like the internet, so I've ended up building a lot of things there.
Okay, well, that's really cool. So did it all start with quilting?
The business part, sir, I had a life before quilting. And so when I decided, I always wanted to have my own business. That's really where it all came from. And so when I started to quilt just for fun, I looked at it as this might be a project that I could turn into the business I always wanted. So
So
my business has always been quilt-focused.
Okay. And how long ago was that? When did you make your first quilt?
I made my first quilt, like the first, I have like three first quilts, so,
okay.
My first
three phases,
quilt.
Yeah.
The first quilt was, I made like in, you know, like 78 because I needed a bedspread for the bed. And that didn't count really in the long run because it did not inspire me to continue quilting.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it would. To start out with that big of a project sometimes can turn people off from ever doing it again.
Yeah, for me it was just like, well, I just needed a bedspread. It'd be like just making a pillow, you know, it wasn't like a life event. then I did make a little project. My girlfriend decided about 15 years ago or so, she decided I should learn to quilt. And so I did a little project at the quilt shop to test out whether I thought I, you know, take a little class. And I thought, yeah, okay, this is kind of fun. I think I'll take the full-blown beginner class for quilt making. And that's when, you know, I got crazy about it. I love fabric.
Yeah, well, what's not to love, yeah.
I know. I quilt so that I can play with fabric. You know, that's like, I used to make clothing, but I wasn't very good at that, so I'm much better at quilting.
That's good. Any excuse to buy fabric, I think there's plenty of us that just buy fabric because we like to own beautiful fabric. So at least we're doing something with it, you know. So
yeah. Yeah, I just bought some the other day because I have to own this one piece. My girlfriend made something out of this, and I just love this piece of fabric. I need to own it because I won't rest. And now that I know it's coming, I'm so happy.
Sounds cool. Which one is it? Maybe I want it, too.
It's really bad. I'll put it on my blog when it comes in. It's a K-Facet. It's a 15-inch repeat. And it's like it has like this stylized tree thing. And
it does sound like something I'd be interested in, yeah.
Yeah, it's really big shape. This tree just repeats, so I like it.
So that was your second start with quilting.
Oh yes,
right?
Yes.
Classes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the third?
Well, eventually I did take the beginning class, and so when I took the beginning quilting class, you know, I learned to quilt by hand, everything by hand, because that's the only way they taught beginners about 15 years ago, and I just loved it. The business started in about 98. That's when I decided I would step out of hobby mode and see what I could do. So I did a little bit of full-time businessing for like 6 months, and then I went back to work full-time for like a year and a half, and then in 2000 started the business full-time again.
Wow, yeah, so it hasn't been really, I mean, in the scheme of things, it hasn't been all that long considering how much you've done in just 10 years, so congratulations, that's cool.
Well, thank you, I like it, it's fun.
Yeah, I know. I love being self-employed. There's really, I mean, you know, it's got its downfalls, as we all know, but it's really, really nice if you can swing it, definitely. So my next question for you, you sort of answered it, but the decision to do it for a living, I mean, that's really a big decision to just, you know, turn away the security of a regular paycheck and benefits and all that. So how did you get to that place that you felt that you needed to do it overnight decision, or was it?
No. I'm a very cautious person, and I had never not worked. You know, I'd always worked I had my first full-time job at 19 in the computer industry, you know, so I'd been working for a long time and, you know, made really nice money in computers. So, you know, I knew I was going to have, like, you know, nothing when you start. So let's go from a nice paycheck to nothing, you know, as fast as you can. But basically in my computer work, I was doing management work, and I wasn't feeling very fulfilled, which is, I mean, a lot of people hit that. You get into a position that you think you want, and then maybe it isn't really, you know, it isn't what you thought it would be, or you change. I think we all change quite a bit over the years. So within the company I was at, they offered me a job down in human resources because they knew I wasn't happy. So I did that job for about 2 years, and it was interesting. There were parts of the job I loved, human resources, parts of the job that were just not at all suited to my personality. So that's when I decided, you know, maybe I better look at this, you know, thing called work for yourself. You know, don't you think, Leslie, you have to be ready to do it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people lose their job and it's like one of the options that they think, you know, if it's hard to find a job in this economy, well, maybe I'll try to do it for myself. But there's so many people that get to a point in their life working for someone else and it's not the right fit anymore. So,
it's huge. It is huge. I mean, and it was immensely scary because I was doing things in the evenings. You know, I was doing things for the local quilt shop. I was teaching. I had met some industry people via internet group, a business internet group, and so I was doing some work for some fabric houses for the trade shows. You know, but it wasn't a lot of work. It was just a little bit. It was a taste, you know, of what
yeah.
could be. And so I didn't have, like, a massive buildup of stuff going on in the evenings and the weekends. And so basically I always tell people I took, like, a six-month sabbatical. But I wasn't going back to the company I came from.
That's a nice way, if you tell yourself that, or even you know, just leave the door open, that does make it less scary, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of forged out and designed a set of patterns, like, within a couple weeks, started sending out letters, because back then there was so little internet, you know, you had to do everything by mail still. And then about June, you know, this is like the beginning of December, and then by June I went and took a full-time computer job again with somebody else doing something slightly different.
Yeah.
So at that point, though, I continued with the business in the evenings and the weekends. I even went to the trade show and I took, you know, on new assignments, and I hired somebody to help do part of the stuff for me because I worked full time. So I did that for like 2 years.
Okay, so that makes sense then, because it's much easier to build your own business while you've got somebody else giving you a paycheck. Right?
It is. Yeah. If you have the motivation, that's the part that's hard, is because you have to work all the time. You know, you go to your day job, and then you come home, and you go to your night job and your weekend job.
Yeah.
So as long as you like it, which I did, and I was highly motivated because I really wanted to do it, so it didn't feel like work. You know, it's...
Yeah. I think definitely when you do something you love, it doesn't feel like work, because I work around the clock, but only because I love it. You know, it's like that's sort of like not my hobby, but it's just what I do for pleasure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I enjoy it. So, yeah.
That would be making things, whether I was doing it for a deadline or just for me. So.
Right. So you're obviously doing what so many people wish they could do, and you're making a living doing what you love. And I've known you for several years. You definitely make it look so easy and so fun. But what you said once, you know, you love it and all, but it still works. So it's something you've got to do even when you feel like it. And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes discipline being successfully self-employed.
Yeah.
Can you share what you think are four or five key things that somebody who's thinking of going into or, you know, starting their own business, what they should consider?
Well, you have to consider the money angle. That's number one. I mean, you should really figure all that out so you're not, like, in major panic mode. Because really when you start a business, you know, there's not a lot of money coming in sometimes in the beginning until you build your name and your reputation, depending on what your product is, of course. But,
yeah.
You know, and it's a lot easier now, I think, with the Internet because you get to people a lot easier than it used to be to make contacts. But, you know, have your feel comfortable because really it's that's, you know, like for me, this is a family business and there's no other income. This is our income. So, you know, it's always out there that you have, you know, I'm earning a living doing this, paying my mortgage and my health insurance and buying groceries. So that's one thing is to get that sort of underway or under control, I guess, is knowing what you're going to do there. The discipline part, I can tell you, Leslie, that I could never have done this when I was like 25.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to. It was always there. I used to sit and sketch out my business plan, but I wasn't ready because, I did.
Wow.
I had just all my whole life, but I needed to be ready, and that means you have to give up some stuff when you're going to work a lot. So, you know, when you're mentally ready, I think you do know it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like really sketchy about it, like, well, no, I don't want to work on the weekends. Well,
right. You're
probably not ready then because.
Yeah. You got to get out of bed every morning and, you know, there's nobody there saying, you know, like you're going to get fired if you don't show up. So that takes a lot.
Right.
Just that daily discipline of having to get up every day and make your way in the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've always liked to work. I mean, I always enjoyed going to my job when I went to an office. I loved it. I loved going in. And so that was never, I mean, I've always just really liked that part. But not having as much free time is a big adjustment when you own your own business.
Yeah.
You give up a lot of free time, and you need to come to terms with that and sort of accept it's going to happen and work it out. You work out eventually how to have free time. A lot of people the things that I do have a lot of deadlines. I mean, you know what that's like. You have a lot of deadlines. We have deliverables. And you have to get things to people when you said you would, or they won't hire you again.
So that really lights a fire. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there is a hard deadline. The magazine needs that project in it. You know, you can't send it 2 weeks late. What I found is that a lot of people actually don't have jobs with scheduled projects. And so the concept of that isn't something in their normal mode of work. You know, maybe they work on a job where all their tasks are sort of 1 or 2 day oriented. I came from a world of massive project management that we did, computers and project management. So I'm really used to managing time. And so I would recommend if someone is not used to managing time, you have a job where your deadlines are sort of daily. You know, you get things that come in, they have to go out. Maybe the next day they go out. Find yourself some sort of volunteer work or something or take a second job that you have some sort of scheduling and deadline so you see whether it works for you.
Yeah, that's a great idea, even like working on the quilt show committee or something because, everything there is time sensitive. Right, so...
Right, you know, it's interesting because I was just had that conversation with a friend recently, and her job is very daily. Her things happen on a day or 1-2 day basis, and she said, that's the difference. That's why, you know, when I talk about what I do, it sounds like, oh my gosh, you know, all this stuff. Whereas to me, this is really normal. It's not unusual or strange. It's like my life has been like this always, and. So if you don't have that, you need to get it and get that part figured out so you don't get uncomfortable with it because you need to be organized. And
Yeah, it's funny. That's how I operate, but it never dawned on me that there are jobs or people that don't
their deadlines aren't part of their life like it's been for my
life.
Right.
It's a long time, yeah. So
I think a lot of artists, I mean, real pure artists, I don't consider myself a pure artist because I have, like, too much scheduling brain, but, you know, they need a keeper. You know, you have friends that need a keeper.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who tells them, be here on this day. Do this by this day. And if a person is like that and going out on their own, then they need a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the teaching part of it, too. You've got to be pretty structured just to show up for the class with all the supplies you need, time in and time out. Sometimes it's just harder than everything else for me. But, you just do it because your reputation is at stake.
So. Oh, yeah, because your customers, which are your students in the case like of a class, you're going to have the, you know, across the board type of personalities. And when you come in sort of all, you know, discombobulated, it doesn't look good. You know, your people who are like you, they don't mind, but the people who are real structured will be like, oh, this person's clueless, and, you know, it's not good in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes work that goes on to teaching a class too. So that's, you know, we're not talking about teaching at the moment, but,
it's a project that a lot of people who work for themselves have to do. I mean, we're talking, you know, artists and crafters and stuff. Eventually, you get asked to teach, like, whether you want to or not. Somebody's going to ask you.
Yeah. Which is a good thing, but then again, it's like another whole skill set and discipline
mm-hmm.
and organization. It's all, it really, you know, that's probably, like you said, most artists think they want to be, you know, make a living or be really successful, but then you really got to bring in that aspect of discipline and schedule
right.
and all that stuff, yeah, so. That might turn somebody off, saying, oh, I got to keep a schedule, then never mind.
Right. Never mind. I mean, if you have the luxury of hiring somebody or partnering with somebody in your business that is your other brain, you know, the other half of the brain, that's an excellent combo. I know a design team that is like that, that the artist does the artsy thing and then the other gal does the business and the pattern writing and, you know, more the organizational stuff.
Yeah.
So
sounds real good.
They're very compatible and they're you know, they bring to the table the two parts. So
yeah. That's great. Okay, so we got money and discipline. What else?
Yeah. Well, I guess you need to have a work area, and I know that, you know, work areas are different for everybody, but you need, like, a place that, you know, like, I know you, Leslie, are, like, the epitome of working in the smallest humanly possible space, but, you know, most people can't do what you do. You are unique.
Make do. Yeah, I'm the queen of make do.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Most of us can't clean our bed off every night so we can go to sleep. You know, take the project off the bed. But I do think it's important to develop a space where you go to work in if you work in your house, because even if it's just your computer table or whatever, you know, it's good. I've been lucky to always have a space, even when it was my hobby. Even before I quilted, I had a sewing room. You know, I've always had
nice.
A spot.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I want to relax, I go sit in my living room, and then I'm not so much working as in my workroom. So, and I had another thought here.
So then I'm going to add to that. You need a work area, but you need a space to escape to as well.
Yes, yes, right. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you work at home. Holy
right.
cow. You've always worked at home, haven't you?
Yes,
yourself?
I have, even before I became a full-time artist. My husband and I have
mm-hmm.
always had a business in our home. So, yeah, sometimes it, you know, it's just like, I got to get out of here. But we, I don't know, we're very compatible and we've made it work.
Yeah.
It really wasn't even a struggle. It was like, boy, we get to work together at home. Yay. So,
yeah.
It's been good. Yeah.
You know, my husband and I work together, but he has to work on a different floor in the house from me.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I
can't
hear
work
that
at the same floor.
Working couples. Yeah. But the only thing I think is that my children have grown up, you know, with their parents being accessible 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite thing was when my kids would come home from school or something, and my husband appraises real estate. So they go, "Where's Dad?" And I go, "He's working." You know, it's like you're not always sitting at home working. There's
lots
of work, but they just assume that parents are home all the time. So
yeah.
At least they stay out of trouble that way, too. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Work area. And
work area.
Anything else after work area that's important?
No, what are we talking about again? No.
let's see. What do you think are the five key things someone should be aware of when considering turning
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes. Yes. You know, I think you have to have some decent internet skills nowadays. You didn't have to have it before, but if you're looking at this now, it's vital. I mean, you need to blog. You need to have a website, even if it's the name points to your blog. You know, you're probably selling a product. So whether that's a physical item someone buys or service, you know, like your coaching, you need to be able to advertise it. You have to be a little bit savvy on what's out there. You need to be on Facebook. Maybe you need to be in forums for whatever your specialization is. Then there's tons out there. You can't do everything, but you need to do some of it. You know, you have to pick what you're able to do. Because it's really vital to business anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you there. And even 5 years ago, it wasn't all that. I mean, you know, people that were savvy enough were online, but it wasn't the way it is today. That it's just such a necessity. Yeah.
Yeah. The last 2 years have totally changed. I mean, it's just been amazing what's changed in 2 years, just in the social networking and how people look for things. Get yourself online. And if you're afraid of something, go take a little class. You know, the libraries, you know, different counties have stuff, you know, your state, counties. So there's stuff out there. You can learn how to do it. None of it's hard. You can do it at very basic.
Yeah. I think it just, most of all, just becomes overwhelming if you're not familiar with it. So, not hard, but overwhelming. Yeah. Okay. So, is there anything else that you think people should be surprised of?
You know, the one interesting thing, and I'm sure that you must talk to people about this when you're coaching, but is to be sure that you know what you're going to go into business for. Does that make sense? Because I think
why are you doing it?
Why are you doing that? Is it really, do you want to take your hobby or your fun thing and make it work? Because, like, you can talk to any shop owner, like a yarn shop, a cross stitch shop, a quilt shop, you know, and a bead shop. Well, they never get to do that anymore. The quilt shop owners are just be the first ones to tell you, we don't quilt anymore. You know, they have to build up to a certain level so they get employees who can run things so they can quilt again.
Definitely.
You know, so, like, for me, people think I sit around all day and quilt. Some people think that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could be weeks sometimes between quilting happening here at the house, so.
Yeah. And then when you're doing it, you're usually doing it for a deadline for someone else, not a magazine or a book or something.
Yeah.
It's not for pleasure anymore. That's rare to be able to have the time to do it just because you have this idea in mind that you want to bring into reality. So
It's like a sweatshop sometimes. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you're just working like a crazy person to meet a deadline, you know, for various reasons, whatever those reasons might be. They're all different ones of why that happens to us. One might be your own scheduling abilities. Another might be, like, for the trade show, fabric lines don't come in. So, you know, that's a very short-term thing. But most of it's a scheduling thing. Plus, you don't want to – a lot of work, like artwork, particularly like quilters and stuff, you don't want to take forever to make a quilt. Like, if you're used to taking a year to make a quilt, well, you need to, like, speed it up if you're going to have it as a business, because – there's just no way you'll be able to sustain, you know, putting one quilt out a year. I mean, everybody wants to see what's new. You know, they want to have you turn out things and show them new things you're doing more often. So, you know, you have to sort of find a place where you can maybe create that it's not your work projects and makes time for it. So, like, I always have, like, a project that's, not for me, has no deadline, and I can pick up and do just to have the satisfaction of doing a little handwork or something like that, but without deadlines.
Yeah.
It's not going to be published.
Yeah.
You don't think.
But it might. right, yeah. Well, if I just
also design, it definitely won't be published.
Then I already have to design it. Like, say, yeah. Oh, okay, I like her quilt, I'll just make that.
Yeah, right, because then it's for pleasure, yeah, strictly pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing we haven't mentioned, though, I think, is something that holds a lot of people back from following their passion, and it can be as not, I don't want to say simple to enter a quilt show, but it can be as small as entering a quilt show or as large as, you know, publishing their patterns. But what holds them back is fear that they might make a mistake or that they aren't ready. You know, how do you postpone things thinking, I'll be ready next year or after I read that book or something.
Yeah.
Or the fear of not being perfect. So obviously you overcome that fear, or maybe you struggle with it, or maybe it's present but not a problem anymore. So how do you work with that fear?
Yeah, the fear thing, the perfectionism thing. I always tell people I don't have any perfect bones in my body. I am a perfectionist on a very narrow range of things, which I think is very helpful. You know, I know what they are, and they're very odd, and they don't hold me back because they're just, they're very tiny. They're very tiny little things that I have to be, that my perfectionism comes out in. I'm competitive. I think most people who are in business are somewhat competitive. You know, you want to get out there. You want to have your name out there. You have to have that. But, you know, I'm not worried. I never have been worried what people think of my stuff. I do have, like, years ago, I belonged to a great big guild, and, you know, I was in the guild, and they said you had a hand quilt and a quilt show. Well, our guild is not a juried show. Which is really nice. So there's no jury. There's like a viewer's choice, but that's no big deal. So there's no jury thing. So I entered stuff in that, but I don't enter shows. So for me, that didn't matter. But I was sort of putting my work out there for people to purchase. But I don't ever remember being afraid of that because I wanted to do it so badly. I wanted to work for myself so badly. And that was my you know, entry ticket. That's how it worked. And so, you know, I do a style called folk art. A lot of my quilts are in that style, and I'm not doing a lot of precision work because I know myself, and that suits me, and it makes my heart sing, and it's what feeds my soul. I don't do precision patchwork because I don't like to make those kind of things.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's stressful.
I'll agree with you there,
Yeah. So, I mean, but there are people that just makes them, you know, that they just love it. They just love it to get in there and make everything just perfect. That just, you know, that's a challenge and that's their thing. And it's awesome because their work is so amazing. But I can't make that kind of work, you know, for me. So maybe a little bit of that is knowing yourself. If, like, I have friends who say they love my work, and I have students say this too. They love my work. They love the look of it, but they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're very structured, they're very symmetrical, and they're very perfection-oriented. So I guess, in a way, if someone's having some perfectionist issues, that
I don't know how to, I mean, you probably know better how to get people over that, but to me it's like, well, work with it. Don't fight it. If you need
to be
perfect.
That's point, yeah, right.
You know, find the thing that allows your perfectionism to make you the best because you can be perfect at it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus trying to do a style like mine where perfectionism isn't really called for and then you're worrying too much, you know, because
yeah.
it's not looking the way
right.
it would if I had done it kind of thing. You know, like be an accountant because you need to be perfect. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I always, I say to my students in my lectures, I say, if you're doing something and your shoulders are tense and you're worried, then that's the sign that it's not for you. Because if you're creating art or craft, whatever form you want to work in, it should be totally enjoyable and you should love doing it and it shouldn't stress you out. And I know that there are people there that can do that kind of precision work and, you know, all the miniature quilts and the hand-turned appliqué and all that, and they're just amazing people to me, but there is not a grain of that in me. That's when I start getting tense, and it's like, no way. So, but fortunately for us, there are people that can create those beautiful pieces, and we can create the free form and the fun stuff. That's a good point.
Yeah,
find what it is that suits your personality and your skills. Yeah. Okay. So. okay. Next question I had for you. Oh, yeah. You've mentioned this today, but one of the key things to success is connecting with people. And there's definitely the internet, and there's face-to-face, but how do you make and maintain the connections necessary to keep your business viable and keep it going?
Yeah, the business, there's like, for my business, I have both business people connections and I have customer connections. You know, customers would be like the quilting community, you know, the quilters that like my stuff or like to read my blog or hang out on Facebook.
Right.
So, you know, the business side of it, since we're talking a little bit more business, I'll do that first. You know, there we have the trade show that happens twice a year, and you can keep up via the trade show, which is an amazing thing. It's like if you're in business and want to be serious, you have to get yourself to the trade show occasionally. You know, you may not have to go every year, but you have to at least go occasionally. If not only just to network, you know, and be seen, meet people face-to-face.
Well, it's important. I think for me, the first time I went to the trade show, it was like, it was a whole other world. It's just, like the backside of the quilting world that you never see, and it's very eye-opening, I think. And yes, if you're going to be in business or intend to turn it into business, definitely you need to know how the back, you know, the backside operates. So that's a good point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And they have classes. So, I mean, you can get really into some, you know, business classes even, you know, through any trade organization like CHA if you're doing it for, you know, beading or whatever. So that's, it's out there. Now, and you can then keep up with those people by email or by Facebook. I mean, that's probably and a few of them do Twitter, but it's a very small community for, at least for quilters on Twitter. I think maybe the knitters are a bit heavier on there than fiber people. But the other part is my, you know, networking with my customers, you know, the quilters themselves. And really I do it because I love it. I just love to talk to quilters. I love to hang out with quilters. I know. My hairdresser asked me once, she goes, "Are all your friends quilters?" I said, "I think so." It's horrible. It's wonderful. But it's like, oh, well, I guess my neighbor doesn't quilt, and I like her too. But, you know.
Yeah.
And my other neighbor.
Not a bad way.
Quilt.
Yeah. Not a bad life, though. Yeah. Because everybody gets everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Everybody gets everybody else. And I like to talk about making things. All my friends that I'm close to make things. I just like people who make things. We feel connected with instant bonding, instant community, instant stuff to talk about. It's never ending. You always have something to talk about. And we like to go do things together, go to shows together, talk about what we found, what we bought, what we're going to make, what we did make. I mean, just that. And yeah, I know. It's just never ending. And I do that on the Internet. That's what I have all the people there I do that with. And it's so much fun. I do it because it's fun. Now, it may not be fun for everybody going into business. You may not be able to do it at the scale that I'm doing it because I'm doing it because it's fun for me. And that's one of those knowing yourself issues.
Exactly. Okay, so now I got to ask you what this quilt mashup thing is.
Yeah, oh, the quilt mashup, that's my forum. Yeah, I used to have a Yahoo group. And it's sort of a lot of the people in the Yahoo group that like to chat all went out and built blogs because that was all happening, you know, and they built blogs and they sort of did their blogging thing. And so the Yahoo group wasn't really very active anymore. So I decided to build a forum instead, which gives me a little bit more control because I'm running it versus the free service. And I also can categorize topics. So quilt mashup is, you know, mashup is just sort of putting things together. And on my forum, like most forums, there's areas for non-quilt talk and quilt talk so that people can, you know, people can talk about the books they're reading because, you know, a lot of people like to read books. But if you don't like to read books, you don't have to read that section.
Good.
And then we have, so the forum is compartmentalized a little bit. And then people can, like, if, let's say we're doing, a bunch of people are making the same project. Well, we might create a topic for that. But if you aren't making that project, you don't really care to read or hear about that, you don't have to get the notices on that topic. So that's what a forum will do for you. And I like the format. It's different than just getting one email a day with everything in it like a Yahoo group does. But there's lots of forums on the Internet, and you either like them or you don't, but they're a lot of fun. So that's what that is.
Okay. Yeah, that answers my question because I don't know if you would say I don't like forums, but I just, A, I don't have time, and B, there's just, I guess I'm more of a A to B person, and I find the forums confusing for me. So, but you've made it sound, you've helped me understand that there is a structure to it all, so.
Yeah, and most of them you can get notified on the topics that so that when somebody writes something new on the topic, you'll get an email. So you don't have to go there and look until you get the email. And of course, some people just come every morning and check before when they get up because it's fun, or in the evening.
Like reading the paper. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so after all this talk, how do you define success?
Oh, that's such a hard question you sent me. It is.
It's different for everyone, yeah. So
it is, and I think it changes.
Yeah.
Right now, what I define success as is much different than when I started my business. You know, having one customer was success. Yay! But now, you know, a lot of it right now is geared on, can this support my family, this business? You know, it's a little bit more focused on it. The business, I've had it for 10 years full time, so it's sort of like, wow. I mean, I've already beat the statistics.
Congratulations.
Yeah, most new businesses fail in 3 to 5 years. So I didn't fail, and I am successful because I keep going. But it changes. It changes all the time. The industry changes. What customers like change. Who likes you changes. You get new people. People drop out. And so for me, success is always just sort of trying to keep it stable, trying to not dip too low, you know, just keeping it with the right number of customers and the right amount of work so that I do have a little bit of time where I can sit and, you know, crochet instead of, you know, take a few days off and not feel like I'll be way, way behind. So for me, it's probably scheduling still, you know, probably always. And everybody thinks, well, you know how to schedule so well, but it's a huge balancing act.
Yeah. And that's a good point, though, because a lot of people think, you know, when I get this, then I will be a success, or I will have made it or something. And it's like a moving target to get to that point because, you know, yay, I got my work published in a magazine, and then a month later it's like there's another magazine, and, you know, it's like, okay, so you need to keep redefining it and keep, I guess you keep growing with it too. Yeah, I think so. Right.
And the industries change, which, you know, like 10 years ago, if somebody had told me that, I wouldn't have been able to understand what that meant. And unless you're in it, it's probably hard to understand what that means because you're in charge of everything when it's your business. You know, when you work for somebody else, you don't care about how the medical plan is figured out or, you know, that somebody's bought the boxes to do shipping, you know.
Yeah, right.
Now you care.
Okay. Excuse me. So my other question that I get to ask all my guests, because I love hearing the answer, is where does art come from?
Like my art? Is that what you mean?
Any art. Your art?
Any art,
you know,
my art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like people, especially people that don't create. They, you know, it's like, well, why are you motivated to create and why am I not? That kind of question, too. But where does your art come from?
Yeah, I think it just comes from my soul. I mean, and I'm sure that a lot of people say that, is that you really don't have a choice. Some of us don't have a choice. It's like I've always sketched. I'm not a drawer and I'm not a painter, but I'm just a doodler, and I always have made things, always. I mean, I don't think my parents knew what to do with me because they are not makers of things.
Right.
And my mother just opened her wallet and give me money. And I would go down to the craft store and bring back some project, and I would make it. And then I learned to sew, and they bought me a sewing machine, you know, because my mom figured out, you know, this is keeping me busy, and I liked it. And so from, you know, I sewed a lot. I tried a lot of other art forms. You know, I beaded. I did stained glass, which I'm really bad at. And, you know, but I tried a lot of things. And basically, I just like to make stuff. It's like when I said earlier that all my friends make things. And they do, because I like to make things. I like people who make things. And we always have something to talk about, to share, to go. But mine all, it's like I don't really have a choice. I've always made stuff. And I would be figuring out something to make no matter what.
Yeah.
It's how my brain works.
It's how you are, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good answer. So what's next for you? Any books or fabric line? Do you have a new fabric line this season?
Well, I do. We didn't know where it was going or what its deadline was, but I finally got confirmation the other day that there will be a fabric line being shown in fall that is mine. And so, yay, because we weren't really sure. I'm not sure yet if I'm allowed to say everything about it because it's done in conjunction with a big project. So
okay.
I have to wait just a little closer to the trade show and then watch my blog or my newsletter, because it's a whole big thing that's happening with a lot of different fabric companies. Yeah, so and I get my fabric gets to be part of it. So
that's
cool.
Really great, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll be in Houston then?
I will.
Okay.
You?
Good.
Are you going this year? Yeah.
I will be
there. That's right. We talked about that. Yeah.
And I hope a lot of our listeners will be there too to see the fabric. I'm curious now, really.
Yeah.
Not just a fabric line, but it's like a fabric event.
It's a fabric event, yeah. And I'm not sure that there'll be anything at the festival. It may just be for the trade show part. Because I think it's all just sort of gelling for everybody just to get the presentations there, and then it'll be announced probably starting the magazines will start showing it, you know, soon after. But
congratulations!
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
If people want to see more of your work or even hear more from you, they can hear you on your very own radio show. So tell us when and how to tune into that.
Yeah, I do a live show on Monday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so you can listen live or you can download it. If you go to my website, on Mondays I always list who the guests are. And then there's also on the top bar of my website, PatSloan.com is the website. My blog is PatSloan.typepad.com. And there's Creative Talk Radio, and that has my full schedule. I have over 30 shows now.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to catch up to you. I don't know if I can because you're always going to be ahead of me anyway. Okay. And if people are curious about your work, your quilts, your books, your patterns, you've got it all right there on your website.
Mm-hmm. They can click around. I've got free patterns. I have a web store, so there's just all kinds of stuff they can find.
Cool. Okay. Is there anything else you... Yes, PatSloan.com. Okay. So is there anything else you want to share before we close today?
Well, I just hope people, you know, do what their passion is. You know, we talked a lot about that here, you know, doing what really feeds your soul. And if you have the desire to do it, you should give it a try. Even if you're not doing it full-time, you can still try it in your evenings and your weekends and just see how it feels, see if it fits, and then let us know. Huh.
Yeah, that's true. Let us know. That's because that's what we're all about, spreading.
Yeah.
I always say I'm like spreading the love of art, but just.
Yes.
just joy in creating. And, you know, even if people, so many people think they don't have any talent, but everybody's talented in different ways, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sure if we can just reach them all, eventually we'll convert the world to art.
That's
and
right. That's right.
It's a noble cause, I think. So, okay. Well, it has been great talking to you today.
And thank you.
I look forward to meeting up with you in Houston, and I know our listeners will look forward to seeing what this big surprise fabric event is going to be. And, yeah, and do you have a new book out?
I have a book that'll be, we're waiting to see the release date. I have the cover and everything,
okay.
So it's probably in a couple weeks, I think.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah, maybe early in November.
Okay, so they can check that out on your blog, too, as to when that's
going
to be available. So, way cool. So thank you so much, Pat. It's been really
thank
fun.
You.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's today's show. A special thanks to Pat Sloan for sharing her wisdom with us, and thank you for joining us. The next show will be on Monday, October 25th, and my guest is digital artist Mary Taylor. We'll be talking transfer, inkjet transfers, that is. So mark your calendars now. This is Leslie Riley with Heart and Soul Radio. Remember, art is what you make it.